adyarhaniyasanamastitam param. Vritam chatudoso dasapancha shaktibhi. Yuktam bhagai swair itaratra chatruvai. Sva-eva dhamam ramamanam ishvaram. The Lord was seated on his throne and was surrounded by different energies, like the four, the 16, the five, and the six natural opulences, along with other insignificant energies of the temporary character. But he was the factual Supreme Lord enjoying his own abode. Purport by His Divine Grace, Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord is naturally endowed with His six opulences. Specifically, He is the richest. He is the most powerful. He is the most famous. He is the most beautiful. He is the greatest in knowledge. And he is the greatest renouncer as well. And for his material creative energies, he is served by four, namely the principles of Prakriti, Purusha, Mahatattva, and Ego. He is also served by the 16, namely the five elements, earth, water, air, fire, and sky. The five perceptive sense organs, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and skin, and the five working sense organs, the hand, the leg, the stomach, the evacuation outlet, and the genitals, and the mind. The five includes these sense objects, namely form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. All these 25 items serve the Lord in the material creation, and all of them are personally present to serve the Lord. The insignificant opulences, numbering 8, the ashtasiddhis, attained by yogis for temporary overlordship, are also under his control. But he is naturally full with all such powers without any effort, and therefore he is the Supreme Lord. The living being, by severe penance and performance of bodily exercises, can temporarily attain some wonderful power, but that does not make him the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, by his own potency, is unlimitedly more powerful than any yogi. He is unlimitedly more learned than any jnani. He is unlimitedly richer than any wealthy person. He is unlimitedly more beautiful than any beautiful living being. And he is unlimitedly more charitable than any philanthropist. He is above all. No one is equal to or greater than him. No one can even reach his level of perfection in any of the above powers by any amount of penance or yogic demonstrations. The yogis are dependent on his mercy. Out of his immensely charitable disposition, he can award some temporary powers to the yogis, because the yogis hankering after them, but to his unalloyed devotees, who do not want anything from the Lord save and accept his transcendental service, the Lord is so pleased that he gives himself in exchange for unalloyed service. Lord Brahma's most extraordinary vision of the Supreme Lord Narayan sitting on his majestic throne in the Vaikuntha world, surrounded by his various energies. The spiritual energies, and Brahma saw that the material energies appeared very insignificant. In this material existence, all of matter is quite insignificant because it is always in a state of transformation. It is temporary. It is illusory. This material world is real because it has been created by the Absolute Truth or Krishna. Anything created by the Absolute Truth must also be truth. But a devotee understands scientifically by the Lord himself how these various truths are related to the Absolute Truth. And that is called knowledge. And not to understand the relationship between the various relative truths and the Absolute Truth is called ignorance. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnat Udachyate. Absolute Truth is perfect and complete. Therefore, all emanations from that truth are similarly perfect and complete. In the spiritual world, everything and everyone is perceiving existence in a mood of service to the Absolute Truth. Therefore, in the spiritual world, everything is eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. Because everyone is seeing everything according to reality. Krishna is Purusha. He is the supreme enjoyer. Everything is meant to be utilized by him and for him. And when we perceive according to that conclusion, then all the temporary bondage of material existence ceases to exist. We see everything in truth. In the spiritual worlds of Vaikuntha, we find in its perfect form, and in this material world, everything is in a perverted form. Its source is Vaikuntha. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, when a banyan tree is standing on the bank of a lake, the reflection within the water is quite the opposite of that of the original tree. The bottom of the tree is the top of the reflection, and the top of the tree is the bottom of the reflection. And the reflection is always subjected to so many distortions. If there is mud, if there is wind, if there is waves. But the tree stands as it is, unaffected by the reflection. So similarly, what is in the spiritual world, which is full of variety, full of wonderful, wonderful activities of transcendental enjoyment, is reflected pervertedly in this material existence. It is explained in the Shastra by Sri Shukadev Goswami that lust exists in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, kama is opposite of the lust of this world. The kama of the spiritual world is everyone's mind and senses are longing to give enjoyment to Krishna. No one considers their own personal selfish interests. In this material world, lust is people are plagued with the most horrific disease of selfish desire, where they practically become go insane due to the desire to want to enjoy sense gratification. In the spiritual world, anger is there. But anger there is based on the fullness and the richness of a completely satisfied heart that simply wants to use a particular type of behavior only to increase the pleasure of Krishna. But in this material world, anger is due to our egoistic, selfish desires. We want to enjoy more and more and more, and anything or anyone that impedes the fulfillment of our plans for sense gratification, we become very angry. Similarly, pride. In the spiritual world, everyone is proud of Krishna's beauty, Krishna's knowledge, Krishna's wealth, Krishna's strength, Krishna's fame, and Krishna's renunciation. But in this material world, we are all proud of our own, of mine, of my family, of my caste. In this way, everything is in relationship to our own selfish desires. And in the spiritual world, there is greed. Everyone wants more and more and more service. They can't get enough service. They're just greedy for service. And that greed does not create a materialistic competitive spirit amongst each other. Everyone's greedy to serve each other. Every Vaishnava has intense, insatiable greed to serve every other Vaishnava. And then, therefore, there's an endless enthusiasm of excitement of everyone just trying to serve each other, trying to get more and more and more and more service for another, knowing this is what pleases Krishna. And pleasing Krishna is the only object of our lives. But in this material world, the greed is to accumulate more and more for myself, even at the expense or at the cost of others' lives or happiness. In the spiritual world, there is illusion. But that illusion is arranged by Krishna himself only to increase the fulfillment of the desire of the devotee to please Krishna. The cowherd boys are thinking, Krishna is my friend. I will wrestle with him and I will defeat him. Why will I defeat him? Because he wants to be defeated by me. It will give him pleasure. When Sri Rama defeats Krishna in wrestling, it's not like the athletes of this world that they think, I am better than you, I have defeated you. I will enjoy and you will suffer. In the material world, when you defeat someone, they suffer. When you win, you are happy. And when you lose, you suffer. This is material athletics. In India, you all have seen cricket, this game cricket. When India wins, the whole nation is celebrating. But whoever they win, the whole nation is lamenting. And when India loses, the whole nation is lamenting. But the other nation is celebrating. So what is better? Naturally, we should be more concerned with that the other nation is celebrating than ourselves. If Sridhama thought that Krishna would be happier by winning, Sridhama would lose. But he knows that Krishna takes joy, he takes more joy in me defeating him than him defeating me. He will be happier if I do that, because that is his love. So therefore he fights so hard in his wrestling to defeat Krishna, and every bit is to make Krishna happy. Have you ever heard of athletics like that in this world? Where I am going to win because I know that will make you happier than if I lose. Not like that. This is transcendental illusion that everyone is thinking that Krishna is my friend, is my child, and they forget that Krishna is the absolute supreme opulent one. So the same characteristics that are in the material world are in the spiritual world. But we must understand that there everything is based on selfless, pure, unmotivated service to Krishna. And here everything is in forgetfulness of Krishna. Everything is in relationship to our own selfish, fastidious desires, which is based on the false ego, that I am this body. Brahma saw that the material elements were utterly insignificant, and the spiritual energies were all powerful, all pervasive and glorious. In this material world, we are all captivated by these material qualities. Like in a prison house with chains binding us to this futile way of life. Look at society today. People are just struggling and straining. Pavarga. Foaming at the mouth, working so hard, so much pain, so much labor, and whatever you get, you have so much fear. And gradually, death fulfills all of your expectations, because everyone is expecting death at every moment. This is the material existence. And yet the means by which we can achieve eternal happiness is there. But people do not want it. They do not understand. They are just struggling hard for material existence and making so much propaganda to convince everyone that this is happiness. If you go to a mental hospital, someone is beating their head against the wall thinking, this makes me happy. Someone is scratching his eyes thinking, this is making me happy. Someone is biting his hand thinking, this is making me happy. Have any of you been? We have seen. This is what goes on. And therefore the doctors and the nurses, they keep people in straight jackets and they tie their hands and they tie their heads so they don't beat their head. Because they have this insane, crazy conception of happiness. And they think they're deriving happiness. Beating their head, the harder they hit their head, the happier they feel, the more pleasure they experience. Now a sane person thinks, crazy, what are they doing? This is the devotee, how he sees all these people in this world. They're going to their permit rooms and drinking alcohol, thinking, oh, this will make me happy. They're going to the concerts and listening to all sorts of materialistic music, thinking, oh, this is making me happy. They're sitting at home hours and hours on end with the television blasting at high volume, thinking,
this is making me happy. They're looking for some beautiful woman or handsome man to enjoy with, thinking, this is making me happy. Because they're insane, they're crazy, they're fools. All these things are actually just sowing the seeds of misery. All these things are making us forget Krishna and our relationship with Krishna, and foregoing the purpose of life and incriminating us in deeper and deeper forms of karmic bondage. And they're thinking, this is making me happy. And they're riding on the trains, and they're driving in the traffic jams, and they're going to their offices, and they're working and working and working, thinking, if I accumulate money, this will make me happy. It's like this whole society is a massive, insane asylum. People are crazy. And the devotees, they're just looking on with great sorrow. It is a life of pain. And yet they're thinking it's happiness. They're actually thinking it's happiness. But some people, somehow or other, they're a little sober and they realize they're suffering. That means some little sanity is beginning to awaken in their hearts. When you understand that this material world is a futile place and all these pleasures are sources of misery, so what is the use? What is the use of money? What is the use of illicit sex life? What is the use of intoxication and eating whatever tastes good to my tongue? You taste something and your tongue gets a second of pleasure and then it's gone. That's all. What is the use? You take a few bites, you think, oh, this tastes very nice. And then you have to take birth and be slaughtered for every hair on the body of the animal that many times, just for a few seconds of, it's not even enjoyment. What is the difference between pleasure and pain? It's actually perception. Some people actually take pleasure in what we call pain, and some people are pained by what we call pleasure. It is a fact. It is just determined by whatever particular mode of nature we're being influenced by. If you take someone in the mode of goodness and put them in a disco where there's all loud music, and all these guitars and drums blaring and people screaming about all kinds of obscene subject matters of love affairs and broken hearts and everything like that, and it's dark and there's these little red lights blinking and everyone around is just looking at each other like, ah, I want you. And take someone in the mode of goodness, that's the most miserable, terrible place. They'll be miserable. And then you take someone in the mode of ignorance who likes that life, and you put him out in a nice forest next to a lake where there are swans and lotus flowers. He'll be totally miserable. He'll be thinking, what am I going to do all day here? At least if I have some intoxication in my brain and my mind is buzzing and my senses are inert, then at least I can appreciate looking at this lotus flower. Otherwise, what is the use? So in this way, what is enjoyment? It is all relative. Real enjoyment, Lord Brahma saw by his vision of Vaikuntha. Real enjoyment is in Krishna. Krishna is Ram. He is the reservoir of all pleasure. In Ramamanam, it is explained in this verse, everyone there is enjoying because they are all engaged in their natural function of serving the Supreme Enjoyer, Lord Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada explains here that Krishna has all opulences unlimitedly. And even the greatest conquerors, the greatest yogis, the greatest jnanis or karmakandis, they can only possess little opulence, insignificant degree. And yet we are proud. The more we realize Krishna, the more we have to be humble. If someone is proud of being very strong, if he just thinks of Mahavishnu, then what pride will be left in him? Mahavishnu, just by inhaling in his yoga nidra, his sleep, he can destroy everything in all the worlds. And we're thinking, I will destroy you. I have been lifting weights and running laps around the city of Bombay for the last 10 years, and I have great powers. But what can you destroy? What can you defeat? How insignificant. If you just remember Mahavishnu, then all your pride of being strong will be vanquished. You're absolutely nothing. And as far as wealth, someone may think I am very wealthy. I have a bungalow in 20 different cities, and I have so many hundreds of cars and drivers and servants and so much money and fine foods and everything else. But the fact is, at the time of death, it will all be taken away. And if the stock market crashes, it will all be taken away. And if burglars and robbers come and beat you, what, you will can't even enjoy any of it. If a mosquito bites you, you can't even enjoy any of it. You're just laying there in a fever. Where are all your drivers? What pleasure is all your bungalows giving you when you're laying there in diseased? It's all. But Krishna is the proprietor of all the planets, in all the universes, in all of existence. And no one can take it away. It is always his. So what is our wealth? What to speak of beauty? People are proud of their beauty. They like to show their beauty. In the Western countries, any beautiful feature you have in your body, you want the whole world to see, just to disturb their minds, to agitate their senses. But then, what is it? It's a miserable condition, because everyone's simply exploiting you. Everyone is simply looking, and actually when someone looks upon you with ill intentions, with exploitative intentions, you become contaminated by that energy. That's why in the Vedic culture, people are very modest. If they have some sort of beauty, they do not show it to exploitative people. They keep it for Krishna. They understand everything is for Krishna. Otherwise, we're trying to attract someone, but actually we're just bringing their karma upon us. It's a terrible situation. Therefore, there's so much suffering. But what is the quality of that beauty? Krishna's beauty is like the sun. It gives this, whatever light there is in the world is only because of the existence of the sun. Whatever beauty we find anywhere in creation, it is only because of Krishna's beauty. He is manifesting through his energies, tiny, minute reflections everywhere of his own transcendental beauty. But he is supremely, unlimitedly beautiful. Krishna consciousness means to actually enjoy by selflessly keeping our attention always on Krishna. By remembering Krishna's beauty, Krishna's wealth, Krishna's strength, Krishna's fame, Krishna's knowledge, and Krishna's renunciation, we can experience unlimited bliss. But you cannot remember Krishna's opulences as long as you are proud of your own. To the degree you want to enjoy your own apparent opulences, to that degree Krishna will not reveal himself to you. Thus a devotee is always striving in the mood of being servant. For a devotee, disease, loss of all property, death is not a bad thing. It is just part of material nature. For a devotee, the most terrible thing is to want to enjoy separate from Krishna. Because then we are really losing something great. So a devotee is always striving to cultivate the mood of a servant. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Das Das Anu Das. Servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. To the degree we have this consciousness, to that very same degree, we can experience Krishna. Krishna reveals himself as we surrender. There are many wonderful stories of how Krishna shows the insignificance of a person's pride and prestige by his own powers. Durvas Muni was very, very proud of the mystic powers that he had. But when Sudarshan Chakra came chasing after him, he realized he was helpless, he was insignificant, he was nothing. And ultimately he had to surrender to become the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. That is transcendental knowledge. One time, one of our God brothers, I believe he was in Los Angeles, and he was thinking that this whole temple is working under my management. And actually, it was a very good temple. Los Angeles is the Western headquarters for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. At that time, it was a small center, but in the beginning days of Hare Krishna movement, small centers were considered big because they were bigger than the temples that were smaller, like that. Just like here at Radha Gopinath Temple. I remember at one time when five people would come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, we thought, this is very big, so many people are coming. Because usually it was two or three. And they were falling asleep. That's the way it was at the beginning. Two, three people trying to stay awake. I don't even know if they were trying, actually. And then when five, six people came, we were thinking, this is becoming a maha-large temple. Very big temple. And then we started having more programs. And then we had that one historical program at Vinita Samaj. Is that what it's called? And 2,000 people came. 2,000 people. We were thinking, this is the biggest program. This is wonderful. This is historical since Cross Maidan of Prabhupada. This is this is so big. So many people. Did you see? Everyone was intoxicated. 2,000 people made their arms go up and chanted Hare Krishna. And we couldn't believe it. And now we have Mahasatsang programs, and if 2,000 people come, we think, why didn't you advertise properly? Why only 2,000 people come? There should be 5,000. So things are relatives, what is big and what is small. So this devotee in Los Angeles, he was the commander of the temple. He was giving orders, he was setting standards, and he was doing a very good job. But Srila Prabhupada was not concerned simply with doing a good job on a material platform. Srila Prabhupada was concerned that the spiritual potency of purity and humility was always prominent, because that's what gives substance to our service. It is not just how much we do, but in what consciousness we do it. That is important. So this devotee was explaining to Prabhupada what he had accomplished. And Srila Prabhupada, he said that Mahavishnu, he is so big that so many universes, unlimited universes, are coming out of the pores of his body. Countless. And all those countless universes, the universe we're living in, is very insignificant. Really insignificant. When Lord Brahma went to Dwarka to meet Krishna, Krishna even wanted to show him how insignificant he was. Brahma is the father of every living being within this entire universe. And with his four heads, he is seeing in all four directions, everything. How powerful he is. Even Hiranyakashipu, so powerful he was worshipping Brahma to get his powers. And we find Hiranyakashipu, he defeated Indra, he defeated Varuna, he defeated Vayu, he defeated Agni, but he never even attempted to touch Brahma. Because he knows Brahma is all-powerful. He even prayed to Brahma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the power. And when Brahma came to see Krishna, the gatekeeper asked, he said, please tell Krishna that Brahma has come. So Krishna said to the gatekeeper, ask him which Brahma. So he asked, which Brahma? And Brahma was thinking, how could he ask which Brahma? It's the Brahma with four heads. Because everyone else in this world has one head. So he said, it is the Brahma with four heads. This is his unique position, that he has four heads. So Krishna said, all right, send him in. But in the meanwhile, he called for other Brahmas. And according to the size of a universe, that's how many heads Brahma has. And our universe is very, very tiny in comparison. He saw Brahmas with 8 heads, 16 heads, 32 heads, 64 heads, 128 heads. He saw Brahmas with thousands of heads. He saw Brahmas with millions of heads. And he was the littlest, tiniest Brahma. So it is true. This universe is just insignificant in the cluster of universes. Like a massive bag of mustard seeds. This universe is just one little mustard seed. If one mustard seed falls out of a bag, no one even notices the loss. And he explained, Srila Prabhupada, and in this universe, the earth planet is just a small, insignificant place. The earth planet is very, very small. Varaha Dev, with no effort at all, just lifted it in his tusks. He supported it on his nose. And compared to Swargaloka, Maharlokas, Taparlokas, these are big, big planets. And within this Earth planet, the United States of America is insignificant. And within the United States, California is just an insignificant little part. And within California, Los Angeles is just one little insignificant part. And within Los Angeles, La Cienega Boulevard is just one little street out of thousands upon thousands of streets. And on La Cienega Avenue, it's a long, long street. There's one little house called the Hare Krishna Temple. And in this one little insignificant house, there's one little person walking around who thinks, I am the controller. I am great. We are all insignificant. We are all depending on Krishna. He is Yogeshwar. He is the master of all powers. He is the creator, the maintainer, the annihilator of everything that exists. So the other forms of yoga, other than bhakti, they cannot bring about the awakening of the blissful state of the soul. Because in the karma kanda, we are actually worshipping God or the demigods with the idea that I am the enjoyer, that I am the controller of my sphere of influence. So we cannot understand Krishna through that process. And through the jnana kanda, even if you achieve mukti, you completely forget who you are and you completely forget the personality of Godhead. There is no real pleasure in that situation. And those who follow the Astanga Kanda, trying to achieve yogic siddhis, we become so much infatuated and proud of our own yogic powers. And it's terrible how these yogic powers can contaminate the consciousness. If you perform the proper tapasya, Krishna will give them to you. But it's like poison. You can heal the sick by touching them with your hand. You can create gold or silver or fruit or anything you like just by your mental prowess. You can control people's minds. You can control people's lives. You can change your form. So many things you can do. But if you do these mystic powers, and you'll get them if you do the proper tapasya, definitely, it's not something imaginary. We have seen so many times people with these powers. They can do. They can heal. They can create ashes. They can create gold. They can create so many things. Some do it by cheating. Some can actually do it. But so what? What is so great about that? It's actually disgusting. Why? Because if you have the slightest trace of false ego, you'll become so proud that I am better than everybody else. I can do what no one else can do. And even becoming very learned is dangerous if you start thinking I am better than everyone else. Therefore, a devotee does not aspire for any of these things. He does not want any of these things. Prabhupada explains here, he only wants to please the Lord. He only wants to please Krishna. And the only way to please Krishna is when he gives himself in unalloyed devotion. In fact, Krishna, Prabhupada explains that he can award some temporary powers to the yogis because the yogis hankering after them, but to his unalloyed devotees,
who do not want anything from the Lord save and accept his transcendental service, the Lord is so pleased that he gives himself in exchange for unalloyed service. If you want wealth, Krishna will give you wealth if you perform the proper yajna.
If you want liberation, Krishna will give you liberation and you'll forget everything.
If you want yogic powers, Krishna will give you yogic powers.
But if you do not want anything except to please Krishna, then Krishna will give you himself. And when he gives himself, he gives the source of all wealth, of all knowledge, of all beauty, of all strength, of all fame, of all renunciation. He gives you the source of all powers. When Brahma is seeing Vishnu in Vaikuntha, he's seeing all the energy sitting at his feet as his servants. When you get Krishna, you get everything. You get his whole abode. You get all of his energies, all of his powers, everything. That is Krishna consciousness. But we do not get it for ourselves. Krishna gives himself to us according to our desire to serve him.
We must be very, very fixed and convinced and not allow anyone or anything to divert our attention away from our goal of life, which is unalloyed service to the Lord. Don't let the propaganda of the jnanis, the yogis, or the karmis distract your attention from our purpose to become the humble servants of the Lord, to please the Lord in every respect. Is there any question?
Maharaj, you were explaining about how the nature of pleasure and pain is just a matter of different perception. So it has been scientifically done in the laboratory how the same sort of peace, tranquility and pleasure with the greatest yogi's experience can be artificially induced in the laboratory by stimulating some hormones in the brain, and they get exactly the same experience what that person has done through so many decades of tapasya. And this is being done to people to give them the same sort of pleasure for paying something. So my question is that how do we really know that at our neophyte level, or even probably at the advanced level of Krishna consciousness, that pleasure is not just a sense of perception which we are enjoying, but it is actually coming from the spiritual platform, from the spiritual world and from the soul.
We are not concerned with our own pleasure. We are concerned with pleasing Krishna. When you water the root of the tree, automatically every part of the tree is satisfied. That is our aim. Devotees are not so concerned with pleasure or pain. They are concerned with pleasing Krishna. Others are very much concerned with getting pleasure. The yogis, they perform severe tapasya. They give up eating, they give up drinking, sometimes they give up sleeping, sometimes they literally torture their bodies. But the goal that they're trying to achieve is a higher form of material pleasure. But the materialists do the same thing. They work so hard in so many ways, through so many occupations, and it's so painful, hoping that when they get some money out of it, it will give them pleasure. So everyone is performing tapasya, undergoing great miseries
with the hope of achieving some better pleasure. But devotees are simply concerned with giving Krishna pleasure. That is the difference. And therefore, they are the only ones that can be peaceful, because they are the only ones that are not selfish. So yes, through various chemical manipulations of the brain and the nervous system in the body, you can awaken different degrees of pleasurable sensations or miserable sensations. That is there, but that is mechanical, as the yogic process is mechanical. But through manipulation, you cannot awaken love. You can await physical pleasure or mental pleasure, but not love. That is something altogether different. Love is the natural energy of the heart. They cannot awaken a sense of devotion. They can awaken a sense of a pleasurable experience. I remember at the Rainbow Gathering, some big yogis, sometimes yogis come, and they talk about what kind of ananda they're experiencing. And some of the Rainbow people, the hippies, they say, well, I get that same thing when I take LSD. You know what is LSD? It is a hallucinogenic tablet. Somebody is telling this kind of meditation. There was once a very famous, people called him a guru, and he traveled all around the world, and he could actually touch you between your eyes and chant mantra just by touching you between the eyes. And you would see incredible, brilliant white lights. And you would taste ambrosial flavors in your mouth. And you would hear celestial songs in your ears. And you would smell heavenly fragrances through your nose. And your mind would just be completely immersed in these pleasures. And every limb, every cell of your body just felt like it was having such nice experiences of satisfaction. And actually, they could do this. In fact, I lived at this person's ashram for some time. They wanted to do this to me, but I said, no, no, don't do it. I said, we will impart the knowledge to you. And everyone was saying to me, oh, the knowledge. They'd actually look like they were completely intoxicated and they weren't taking any drugs. They'd come up with their eyes rolling in their heads saying, I received the knowledge. Oh, you should experience the knowledge. It is the ultimate. It is the highest experience of God, of the truth. And everyone was walking around like this. And then the guru asked me, would you like the knowledge? And I said, not now. Let me think about it for some time. But actually, if you go to a place where people are taking LSD, sometimes you go crazy and sometimes you get the knowledge. Same thing. Talk to someone. Read the diary of someone who is taking it. Ambrosial tastes and celestial sounds, and every part of the body is in ecstasy, and your brain is just so happy, and your eyes are seeing wonderful colors, and you're seeing the effulgence on everything and everyone, and auras, and you're singing and dancing and reciting poetry. So what is the difference? Whether someone touches you with their hand or when someone gives you a pill composed of chemicals, the same experience takes place. It is induced. But those who got the knowledge, it lasts for some time, and like LSD, it goes away. And then you're figuring, then you have to think about how to pay the rent, how to satisfy my senses. Same thing. So actual love cannot be awakened, devotion cannot be awakened through chemical manipulation. But other mental and physical experiences of pleasure can be. Therefore, we are not concerned with those things. Srila Prabhupada also said, some gurus, they produce gold, and they give you gold, and you worship them as God. Prabhupada said, you can go across the street and buy some gold. What is the difference? It's actually cheaper. It's cheaper to give 1,000 rupees to get some gold than to give your life to someone for a little gold. Because when you accept the gifts of those people, you become karmically controlled by them. It's actually very dangerous. When by their mystic powers they create something, if they give it and you accept it, you are karmically bound to them. You actually give your life to them in a karmic way. And they have certain priority, they have certain proprietorship over your life. So Prabhupada said it's much cheaper to just go across the street and buy some gold than to give your life for a little piece of gold. The kind of debt you have, karmic, yogic debt, it's very incriminating, very dangerous. Therefore, the natural process of awakening our divine love for Krishna is through following the procedures of the scriptures, which is the congregational chanting of the holy names of
Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare.
It is a gradual process. It is not a cheap thing that someone touches you on the head and you just start seeing lights, or someone gives you a tablet and you start seeing lights. Through the actual purification of your heart by devotional service and continuously chanting the holy names of Krishna, we can truly experience what the heart is always longing for. Anandam buddhivaradanam pratipatam punam ratashvaranam. Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya has prayed that by the chanting of the holy names of Krishna in congregation with other Vaishnavas, we can experience the real ananda, the real happiness of pure, unalloyed, unmotivated, uninterrupted love with a desire to serve Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.